And they didn't give me the job. I'd moved my whole family to Boston. So I was like, you got to be kidding me. My boss was furious. He said, you got to go talk to Jim. He said, I don't know what to tell you. I said, I'm just really sorry. This is crazy. You know, this shouldn't have happened.
Inspiring career stories from today's top CEOs, executives, and leaders. I'm your host, Ash, and you're tuning in to the ExecuTalks podcast. Bracken began his career in accounting after college. After working in accounting roles for an accounting firm and then PepsiCo, he transitioned into brand management early in his career. He first worked at Procter & Gamble, then moved into a general manager position at General Electric. There are several other career moves we talk about in this episode, but I don't want to give away too much information before we begin. Now make sure you stick around until the end to hear about the key positions that Bracken targeted early in his career that empowered his career journey, why Bracken decided to go back to business school after gaining experience, and what advice he has for you while you think about how you want to navigate your career journey. I am joined today by Logitech CEO Bracken Darrell. Bracken, welcome to the show, and thank you for being with us today.
Ash, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it. I can't help but immediately point out that you have the wrong microphone. It's not a blue mic.
Wait, where's your blue mic, by the way? Do you have it?
Trust me, I've got a blue mic. I've got my Mevo camera. I've got my Logitech lighting. I can keep going.
Hey, I'm using the C5 920, I think. It's a webcam with the blue. Yep, that's what I'm using. So.
Oh, good. Okay, well, you've almost redeemed yourself.
Yeah, I redeemed myself. So the first question we always start off with, I'm in a high school classroom with you. Who is Bracken relative to other kids?
I was pretty quiet, very sloppy, pretty smart, but not a genius. I guess most of all, I was shy. You'd have trouble finding me in the classroom.
And I also read that, you know, your parents divorced when you were young. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
How do you feel like that impacted you, or did it impact you?
Yeah, I'd say it did. You know, it made me a lot more independent. My mom was a first grade teacher. You know, she's a first grade teacher on a first grade teacher salary. So we didn't have a lot of money, and she was awesome, but she was overwhelmed. And she also had polio when she was young. So she'd come home from school every day and need to take a nap in the afternoon because her back hurt. And, you know, I think all my siblings and I all became, you know, kind of pretty strongly relying on ourselves, you know, get things done on each other.
How old were you when that divorce happened?
I think I was 10. I don't really remember, but.
What do you remember feeling like during those times? I'm sure like that, the first, you know, 3-4 months of that process was probably, there's a certain feeling that you remember that comes with that. Because the same thing happened with me, by the way. My parents divorced when I was young too, so.
I remember the day that it happened. I can remember my dad left a note and it was Christmas Eve and he left. And I don't remember feeling terribly sad that he left. I felt terribly sad for my mom. Over the next year, she had 4 or 5 car wrecks, and we were in a couple of them. I was in a couple of them. And I became kind of her, one of her 4 resident therapists, you know, the other 3 being my siblings. And she'd come home and talk about stuff and how much she was upset about things. And that certainly had a big impact on me. I probably learned more from it than she did, you know, she'd come home and second guess herself on lots of things. And I said, Mom, imagine you're standing on the beach. You got a stick in your hand. You drag that stick behind your heels. Everything back there is just to learn from. It's over. Your whole life is right here. And I'm sure she already knew that, but that certainly stuck with me. So I learned it. It became like my way of viewing the world.
Yeah, I love that. You get older, you graduate from high school. What made you choose an English major in college?
I was always better at math. You know, it was kind of my strength growing up. That I figured out pretty early I wanted to do something in leadership as a career. I really had either politics or CEO, trying to be a CEO in mind. And I thought, you know, if I really want to do that, I've got to be able to speak, articulate better, you know, in writing and orally. So well, the best way to do that is to major in English. So I took enough accounting and economics I could get a job, but I did English major just to force myself to really become better in the spoken word or the written word.
Wow, that's interesting you say that. This is the first time I've heard somebody say, you know, right before they went into college, they knew the kind of, they wanted to be in leadership. Do you feel like there's a reason that you wanted to be in leadership? Is there a reason behind that?
I grew up, you know, sitting around that dining room table the rare time when we all ate together with 2 older brothers who were both incredibly eloquent and outgoing, and a younger sister who's always the youngest. They're always, and I was just like mute. I mean, I didn't say a thing, you know, and probably when I got outside of the home, I was a pretty big kid, you know, for my age, and I had 2 older siblings, so I became a pretty good athlete. And people physically looked up to me because I grew up very tall very early, and so I was a natural leader in sports, and I was pretty good in school. So when we put that together, I kind of naturally got looked to as a leader, even though I'd never earned it. And then after I stopped getting the natural gift of height and athleticism, making me a leader. I got out of that. And then I went into the earning it business, which was student body president and all that stuff. And I think at that point I knew leadership was my thing. I was kind of hooked on it.
I love it. Okay. So your first job out of college was at PepsiCo. Is that right? Or was it another company?
Well, my first was Arthur Anderson, which was a public accounting firm that's now disappeared. But I worked there for 2 years. Then I went to PepsiCo as an internal auditor. So they're both accounting jobs though.
Accounting jobs. Okay. So you did accounting after college. And do you remember how you got your first opportunity?
Yeah. The only big companies that would come to campus to interview that I knew of were the accounting firms. So I took enough accounting and economics to sit for the CPA exam. I knew that, you know, early in my college career. And I always intended to sit for the CPA exam, go into accounting. I thought there I'll learn the language of business, then I'll go back to school, learn how to lead and be a general manager. I had this old model of learning in school. And then I'll go out and try to become a general manager and maybe one day run something.
And I assume that, you know, even during your bachelor, you know, while you were in college, you knew that at some point you're going to go get your MBA. But, you know, just for our listeners to hear, what made you decide to go back and get your MBA? Was there a reason for that? Or just, hey, I wanted to be in leadership and I know I need these skills? Or was there a reason for it?
Well, I loved education growing up. My dad was a college professor. My grandfather was a college president of a very small junior college. My grandmother's a college professor. My mom was a first grade teacher, but later became a college professor after she retired. So I was really into education. If you're really into education, you got to kind of set the Ivy League schools up in this halo, you know, and I really would have, I imagined going to Ivy League schools, you know, but I didn't think I could get in, or thought I might not be able to get in out of undergrad. And then second, I also thought, God, I love this leadership thing, but if I go to one of those schools where my perception was everybody's rich and you got to be in a fraternity sorority to be in charge of things. And if I want to be a leader, it's better to go somewhere small. So I didn't even try to go there. I went to a small liberal arts school in Arkansas called Hendrick College, 1,000 smaller than my high school. And but even when I went there, I thought, but I'll go back to law school and I'll go to one of those big Ivy Leagues. So I want to do extremely well in college because I want to be able to do that. And then I slowly morphed that from law school to maybe a joint MBA JD to finally just getting an MBA.
Looking back, do you feel like you could be where you are today if it weren't for you getting your MBA?
It is a really hard question to answer. You know, there's no way to replicate your career, your life path. If you pull out significant things from it, right, it would have gone a different direction. So I'll only give an answer looking forward for everybody else out there. I think the answer is absolutely you can get into my job without getting an MBA. 100% sure. In fact, as people would go consult with me during my career and say, hey, I'm thinking about getting an MBA, what do you think? I always said, first, do you just desperately want an MBA? Because I did. And then if the answer to that is no, the next thing I ask is, are you looking for a career change or the pedigree of having something on your brand, on your resume? If the answer to that is no, then the next question is, okay, have you thought about just going and getting some finance courses? Because that's probably the most critical thing you learn as an MBA student. If they've already have a finance background, so now I usually say, well, then I probably wouldn't go get an MBA. You know, I don't see any reason to. I think today it's a very different world, you know, where my daughter's getting an MBA right now. But I think there are so many paths to doing great things in this world and so many careers, you know. But if you want to be a CEO of a large company, which I happen to be, I do not think you need to get an MBA. It doesn't hurt. But mainly just because probably you're going to do a career change in the process. And that's probably not a bad idea either. So I'd say it's probably a help most of the time, but it's not a must.
I'm not sure if this was after your MBA or at some point you were a brand manager at P&G. Is that after your MBA? You went to P&G and you were a brand manager. Is that right?
That's right. Well, I started out as a brand assistant.
What was being a brand manager like?
Well, you know, it was awesome. It was my first real general management experience. You know, at P&G, you know, brand managers are told that they kind of run they're the center of a wheel, you know, and the spokes are R&D and, you know, manufacturing and marketing and all those things. But at the end of the day, a brand manager leads the strategy, leads the brand development, leads the project development, leads the business, makes it work, you know? So I love that idea and that's what I came for. And the reason I did it, when I was at PepsiCo, I was interacting with the marketing people who were a little bit like brand managers at PepsiCo. And I kept thinking, man, that job seems really cool. Then I was in my first marketing class in business school and the professor said, you know, he talked about brand management a little bit that way. And then I saw an ad for a BMW somewhere along the way. And it said, it's the sports car that thinks it's a sedan. When I saw that, I thought, gosh, you know, you could become a marketer, but really you're becoming a GM. you know, I a general manager, and I thought, okay, that's the path I want to take. So that's why I went to P&G. That's why I tried to get into P&G.
At some point, you decided to leave P&G and go to GE. Do you remember back then why you made that decision?
I'd had this incredible experience turning around Old Spice.
You're talking about the commercial with the whistle? That's all I remember.
The guy, yeah, exactly. The commercial with the whistle. Many of your listeners won't even remember that, but... When I had this incredible experience, then I got moved into a different experience. Sometimes in your career, if you're successful in one thing, you get moved into something that's a bigger problem. You know, so I got the next biggest problem. And then I was really looking for growth. And I got a call from a recruiter about a job at GE where it was kind of reporting to a guy named Dave Cote, who was in the running for Jack Welch's job. It was this monster CEO, you know, in my view. And the job would meet with Jack Welch 4 times a year, and my boss would potentially be the next Jack Welch. So I thought, God, you know, I move over and I do this completely different function called business development that I had no idea how to do. And I get a chance to be, you know, on the bench when Michael Jordan is still there, you know, the Michael Jordan of business, which is Jack Welch. And I thought, how can I pass it up? So I talked to my boss and my boss's boss, and you know, and the next job up looked like a job I wouldn't want. And there was no way out of it. I mean, the only way to get there, and I could have gotten promoted there, but the next job above that was really cool. So when you added it all up, it was kind of sort of like, yeah, I definitely want to do this. That's why I left.
So the main contributor to that decision was who you were going to be around?
Yeah, it was really GE was the premier company of the day. And Jack Welch was the premier CEO in the world at that point. And I thought, gosh,
gotcha.
I want to do sense. Being in that company would be an amazing experience.
You know, also in your career, you had jobs where, you know, you worked in Germany and Italy. What was it like working outside of the U.S.? Not a lot of our listeners are outside of the U.S., so they might be wondering, what is it like to work outside of the U.S.?
Well, you know, it was really amazing. I mean, it was, first of all, you tend to think of Europe as Europe, just like you think of the U.S. as the U.S., but, you know, the U.S. is Kentucky, and it's New York, and it's California, and Europe is France, Germany, and Italy. And I really learned, you know, a lot about the cultures that within Europe, you know, and so I learned about the German culture, the Italian culture, the French culture, probably a little more about England, just because I'd spent some time over there in college. So it was an amazing experience. I mean, I would encourage anybody who gets a chance to do it all over the world.
And how is the working culture different? Like just specific things about the working culture different that you feel like maybe has helped you diversify your thinking?
I'll never forget the first time I got to Germany. I went to my first meeting 5 minutes late, and it was already going, you know, it was my meeting. And I was like, you know, they didn't even need me. I mean, I learned, you know, hey, you're on time for meetings in Germany, period. Same thing in Switzerland. In Italy, I learned a whole lot. You know, I was so impressed by the hard work ethic of the Northern Italians. I mean, they would come in early and leave incredibly late and too late. But then on the other hand, they have this strange vacation where they take off like 2.5 weeks in the month of August. And I'll never forget the first time the entire company is going to take off 2.5 weeks in August. I thought, we're going to get killed, you know, because our competitors aren't in Italy and this is an Italian thing. So I was like, I'm not taking off. And then, you know, I sat there by myself in the office for about a few days. I got my family, said, we're out of here. And then I learned, you know, 3 years later, I loved that period because, you know, there were no meetings that had people missing and everybody was out and it was really kicking back. And it didn't hurt us at all. It was great. And so I think I learned, you know, hey, don't accept the mantra that you're raised with, you know, the 5 day work week or the need to work in the office or all those things that we're learning now probably don't have to be that way.
My first impression when you said everybody takes 2 weeks off, I'm like, well, hold on, the ship is going. Somebody needs to drive it while somebody's away.
It's going to go under. It's going to run into an island or something.
Here, right, exactly. Wow, very interesting. Okay, now talk to me about Whirlpool. So Whirlpool, you were at Whirlpool when the economic downturn happened in 2008. And I read, like, I think it was an article that I read, where you helped guide that company's survival, right? And now looking back, what do you feel like maybe were some keys to keep it afloat? Or do you remember how you felt during that time?
That grossly exaggerates my role in Whirlpool.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. First of all, I came there right after the scariest moment. That period when, you know, oh, God, what are we going to do? You know, that moment. What I would say is I learned so much at Whirlpool. Because I had the team at Whirlpool were incredibly good at things like cost management and really executing all the way through. And it's a tough business. It has low margins, big volumes, lots of potential errors, you know, or mistakes you can make, but not a lot of margin for error, you know. I also learned I really don't like low margin businesses. I mean, that's a really hard place to play. You know, you got to do everything right in a low margin business, but they do. And Whirlpool's really good at it.
Hey, I hope you're enjoying the show so far. I want to get to know you on a more personal level, so I'm carving out some time to connect with our listeners, to connect with you. Please email me ash@executox.com. Let's connect over a virtual coffee or an in-person coffee. Okay, back to the show.
Well, I got a call about this little company called Logitech, and I flew to Barcelona and met with, or maybe I was already there, met with my future chair of the board. And he had been the CEO of Whirlpool. And, you know, he's a very charming Italian guy who'd worked for Apple and lived in America for 20 years. And once I spent a little bit of time with him, I thought, wow, this is amazing. Because when I left P&G the second time, I'd been part of Gillette. And I was running Braun globally out of Germany. We were acquired. I left to go to Whirlpool. I left because I was frustrated that I couldn't do what I really believed was possible, which was use design to reinvent Braun and then serially enter new categories with the brand. And when I saw what Logitech was up to, it was the base business was in deep trouble. The iPad had launched. The mice and keyboards were going down. Nobody's going to use them anymore. And so that they were profitable. So we had to take that business and somehow create a new business out of it. So I thought, here's a business that has to serially enter new categories. At P&G, they didn't have to, so they didn't really want me to in a way. So I got stuck in my strategy. I couldn't go anywhere, so I left. But boy, I was really, really excited about that concept. And so when I got to Logitech, that's kind of what we've done.
I'm just kind of imagining you sitting down with your future colleagues, and you haven't made the decision yet on whether you want to join Logitech or not. What made you just decide to join Logitech in 2012?
I just thought, gosh, you know, this is, you never know, right? But I thought this looks like an opportunity to use design to recreate a business that needs it. Every business does, but this one needs it. And then to serially enter new categories, one after the other, because they need that too. And it felt so much like Braun, which I'd run out of Germany. It was a European business, but very global. And I had run a European business out of Germany. So I felt at home in that regard. It was a business where, you know, consumers bought it. So much of it felt like Braun to me. And I loved Braun. I'll always love Braun, but I didn't love the opportunity I could execute within P&G for Braun. And I felt like, okay, Logitech has that and there's free run to execute. They need a change, a big change. They need a turnaround.
Yeah. Do you feel like design is your passion? What do you feel like your passion is?
I have so many passions, Ash. You know, it's like, yeah, I love design. I really do love design. I love design as a way of thinking about your life. You know, you constantly can redesign everything, including your life. And, you know, when I came to Logitech, there were no designers in the company and nobody with the title of design, I don't think. Maybe we had one. Today we have 170 or something. I really believe that you could completely reinvent a business through design.
From a bird's eye level, right? Like looking at your career progression, obviously it's been a long career. But looking back, are there points in your career where when you look back, you say, wow, like that time I was feeling like maybe I'm not going anywhere, you know, like I was feeling like I was kind of in a rut, a career rut, but then kind of some kind of breakthrough happened. Are there moments like that?
Yeah, I would say the biggest one there was I had taken a job at Gillette to really go run Braun. And I took the job at Gillette. I'd really taken a step back. I'd gone from running a big organization to a small one, from being a general manager to a head of marketing again. But I only went there because I thought, gosh, this is a great stepping stone into running Braun globally, which was a $1.7 billion business. And it brought together all the experiences I'd had, my experience with finance, my experience with consumer products, my experience in the hardware business, you know, in the appliance business. It all came together. It was going to come together in Braun. So I was very excited about that. So I took this step back. The deal was I go there, I do this for a year or so, and then I'd go run Braun because they had somebody who's probably going to retire. So I got there and I did this and I was running the smaller thing. It was fun, but it was I'd kind of done it before. And then bang, they fired the CEO instead of that person stepping down, and they replaced him with a consultant who was working for some consulting firm from the outside, and they didn't give me the job. I'd moved my whole family to Boston. So I was like, you got to be kidding me. My boss was furious. He said, you got to go talk to Jim. He said, I don't know what to tell you. I said, I'm just really sorry. This is crazy. You know, this shouldn't have happened. And so I went to see Jim and I was furious, but I never showed it. You know, I said, Jim, why did you do that? You know, I came here for that job. And what is it, something about me? Did I do something wrong? He said, no. He said, calm down. He said, you know, look, careers are long. You know, you got to stop being so short term. I've always been very long term. Quit being so short term. He said, trust me, everything's going to be fine. It'll take care of itself. So I didn't choose this person who wouldn't do that. It was Ed DeGran, the COO. It's his decision to make. But just trust the way it works. You know, it's going to work. I said, you know, so I got up and thought, what am I going to do? I could quit, but then I got to move my family again. And I just got here. And so I decided, you know, I'm just going to put my head down and keep going because, you know, it's the only thing I could do. It's not the only thing, but I decided to do it. And 6 months later, that guy got fired. I got put in the job, and it was amazing. So I had a great experience. So it turned out extremely well. And I think if I had to ladder up from that, I'd say, you know, most of us in who are CEOs somewhere or in their dream jobs or whatever they are, if you look back in your career, you've always had jobs where you had to go sideways, backwards, something. And often those are the best experiences you'll ever have. So don't fret, don't worry, weep a little bit and then get over it. If you have those in your life, because they're usually great experiences.
Beautiful. Yeah. Yeah. My takeaway was like, you know, don't get caught up in the moment. Just like make sure you zoom out and look at the big picture. So that's, I love that. What are you most excited about next?
Well, I'm super excited. I mean, I feel like we're just getting started. Yeah. I've been here 10 years and I'm more excited today than I've ever been. We've never had opportunities like we do today. It's an incredible moment. This pandemic has caused such an amount of change that there's so many things that haven't been touched yet that need to be. So I think this is a monster opportunity period for entrepreneurs, for individuals in companies, outside of companies. There's so many new opportunities now that didn't exist before or wouldn't have existed for years. Or they might have evolved into existence, but now they're there. You can see them. They're so clear, you know, or they could be if you look. So I'm excited about a lot of things inside of Logitech.
Yeah, you probably know the exact stat, but there's like this chart that shows how many websites exist in the world. And then like once the pandemic hit, it like went way up. So like and that's just websites. So the digital world is just like it's exponentially.
I haven't seen that chart, but I'm not surprised. It seems like a likely thing to have happened.
So something I look for when I decide to partner with someone or hire someone is
drive.
And how do you fish that out?
You can usually tell when you talk to people, you know, and it's often related to their passion. It's somebody who's just driven to make an impact. People who are really driven to make an impact will find a way to make an impact, you know, if they're really driven. We all are that way. Everybody's that way. It probably overlaps the most if you have a passion about something for most people. There's a secondary answer to that question, which is curiosity.
The most important quality in a leader is
trust, trustworthy, integrity.
Something that has helped me get past my fears and insecurities have been
always thinking through what's the worst thing that could happen. If you can think yourself to the worst thing that could happen, and then you can kind of say, okay, can I survive that? Or can I stomach that? Or is there some way to mitigate that so that can't happen, but the real worst thing that can happen is this, and I can live with that. Then it enables you to go after much bigger things.
You know, when you think about worst case scenario, it's like, okay, like, you know, you lose your job or something, but that doesn't mean necessarily you're going to go homeless or something, you know?
That's so right. Exactly. That's what I mean. Can you survive that? Yeah, you can survive. You're probably not going to be homeless. If you are homeless, you'll find a way to make something happen. You'll create something.
Something that I've struggled with as a leader personally in the past has been
focus. I have a very, very wide range of interests and an appetite for so much that I certainly am commonly accused of not being narrow enough and focused enough. And I think that's been right some of the time, wrong some of the time. So you can overfocus on things too.
Something I do to make sure that I constantly feel positive and stay productive is,
you know, I'm gifted with this, knock on wood, this something inside me that is just positive. So I always feel positive.
Well, if I were to go back and talk to my younger self in my mid-20s, I would tell myself,
well, if I change that, because I'm not one to regret much. So I will say, if I were talking to somebody out there listening and they're in their mid-20s, I would tell yourself, you know, that it's a cliche, but, you know, boy, use the what's the worst thing that could happen and then take a lot more chances. You know, just don't be afraid of taking chances. You almost never do things that don't work that are the end of the world. And you usually learn a lot more than it costs you. So just go out and try things, do things, you know, and if you get a chance to take on more responsibility, do it. If you get a chance to take on different responsibility, do that. Eliminate the word failure and the word success from your vocabulary. They're both just labels. Focus on learning and growing.
One setback or failure in my early 20s that I will never forget is,
you know, I'm really not wired to think about things as failures. I think about them as, you know, learning. It's that line behind your heels that my mom, that I taught my mom or my mom taught me, depending on how you look at it. I guess the biggest in my 20s, and it was actually early 30s, thing that didn't work that I did was with the launch of Ivory Moisture Care, which I think we lost $33 million in 2 weeks. That's a pretty big one. But, you know, I'd learned so much from that. The main thing I learned was the buck stops with you no matter what you do. So if you don't think something's right, stop it.
And then on the contrary, the sweetest moment I felt in my entire career was when...
That's another one. I'm not really wired for that. You know, when something's happened, it's kind of in the past. And I just look for what to learn from it. It's hard for me to feel proud of it or celebrate it. You know, it's not that I'm not happy. I'm super happy. I just don't think that way. I mean, I think some of the worst things that happened to me were some of the best things that happened to me. And some of the best things that happened to me were probably the worst.
I love that. You know, one thing I forgot to ask you, actually, that I really wanted to ask you about was, and we've said this before, is success inhibits new success or something like that?
This is a really bad idea. I would just avoid it entirely. It's ironic because everybody seeks success their whole lives. But honestly, when you get it, it's actually a problem. So you need to have a mindset that you don't think I've achieved success. You just think, you know, I've learned something and I've had a big impact. And I'm all about today and tomorrow, not about yesterday and what I did, you know, what I'm trying to protect.
Interesting. So focus on, have I learned today? Have I learned this week? Have I learned this month? Instead of, have I been successful this month?
Yeah.
Looking forward, if I could be remembered for just one thing, it would be...
I don't really care about being remembered for anything. I really just want to have an impact with a lot of other people. And I'm surrounded by them now, inside the company now. You know, undoubtedly, you will be, you know, remembered by a few people, probably your family most of all. But you'll disappear in the history of most of the things you're around over time. So you shouldn't get too caught up in that. You should just try to think about, how do I really move this incredible place forward in a very positive way? If you do that, then you've had a pretty good life.
If I were stranded on an island and had access to one meal, it would be...
I guess it'd be a Snickers bar.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say like a Logitech branded hamburger or something. No, I'm just kidding. Thank you for tuning in to this episode. Tune in next time to get another dose of inspiring career stories from today's top CEOs, executives, and leaders. See you soon.